Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas. Later on in the show, Stevie and Craig with me to look back at that Aguero moment, which was 8 years ago. But we start, as always, by taking a look at how the coronavirus is affecting football around the world. Latest news will report that the English Championship close to finalising a plan to resume play as early as June the 6th. But the big news today, coming out of Italy, Serie A clubs have agreed to a June 13th restart pending Italian government approval. Full team training for Serie A clubs will resume on May the 18th. Let's welcome, shall we, Julien Laurent and Gab Marcotti to the show. Gab, this vote, is that it then? We're done? We're going to have action back June 13th. Everything will start again in Italy?
You said it there, pending government approval. Obviously, the league have made their intentions clear. They've been working with the government. The situation seems to be improving in Italy. But this has had so many twists and turns. So you certainly don't want to count chickens before they hatch. And, you know, there's still disagreement over which protocol to follow if somebody tests positive. Do you only isolate the player who tests positive, as they're doing in Spain, and as they generally hope to do in Germany, Dinamo Dresden accepted, or do you quarantine the whole team and potentially create massive fixture congestion? That has yet to be resolved, but they're going to give it a go.
What's the argument to quarantine the whole team, Gab? We obviously, as you mentioned, Spain, Germany looking to do similar. You just put the one person who's been found positive in self-isolation and continue the testing.
Well, I think the idea, look, you're asking me, I'm not a doctor, even though sometimes I play one on TV. Look, the idea is that potentially there could be a lag between the testing times, so that somebody might have tested positive, somebody else might be infected, it might not show up in the test. There are concerns there, and people say, well, the safest thing just to prevent a spread is to go and quarantine anybody. That, by the way, is the reason why in the Dinamo Dresden case, they ended up quarantining the whole team, even though their guidelines were to simply quarantine the individual. There are going to be situations where you may have to do that medically, but you know, the key thing is whether you make it your policy or on the side of caution and quarantine everybody, or whether, you know, you take it on a case-by-case basis. And that's what Serie A hope to do.
Why is it so difficult for both to be on the same page, it seems, Gab, at the moment? Not just with regarding positive testing, but overall getting football back into Italy?
Look, I think a majority of the teams were on board. I think they've had a bad relationship with the Minister of Sport. Also, in Italy in particular, there is sort of a big bureaucracy. There's a lot of people who need to sign off on it. There was a big issue in terms of liability on whether a team doctor would be held responsible should something terrible happen. And there's just been a whole bunch of very complicated and boring legal issues that they've had to sort out. I think that's been the key to it. Now the Prime Minister has intervened directly in trying to mediate, and, you know, they hope that they've passed this this final hurdle. We should probably know in the next week. In the meantime, though, the teams, as you said, will be coming back to training as of Monday. And that's full training.
George, you're very much a half-glass full sort of man. Are you optimistic that we could see action as soon as June the 13th in Italy?
I am optimistic, yeah, and I think Vincenzo Spadafora, who's the sports minister, has been quite cautious since the beginning, really, which maybe is not a bad thing, because the club have been positive, and rightly so, and they want to see the season resuming for many reasons. The biggest one is surely the TV rights last installment that hasn't been paid yet, and obviously if they don't play anymore, that money won't come in. If they play again, that money will come in, so that makes a big difference, especially for some clubs. And I think you can find the right balance between the sports minister being a bit cautious and maybe a bit negative at times, and the clubs being very positive. And if you find the right balance, like Gab has just explained, I think you can be optimistic that they will resume at some point. Although we saw as well Sandra Zampa, who is the health minister, saying like as soon as we will have a positive test, then we will have to quarantine everything and stop everything. So on part of the government, you could feel the cautiousness compared to the clubs especially, but surely they will find an agreement, and I think football will come back.
Gab, just away from coronavirus news, if you wouldn't mind for a moment. This Ralf Rangnick story is fantastic. Obviously, he looks set to be the new AC Milan coach, but he's already upset everyone because he's told everyone.
Yeah, and having spoken to some people, this is not done and dusted. It's my understanding that they did meet with Rangnick as well as other people when they ended up hiring Pioli earlier this year, and I would assume they've been in contact. But it's by no means done and dusted, and he's talking sometimes, you know, as if he was already in charge. Paolo Maldini has been very critical, you know, because when people talked about Rangnick learning Italian, he came out and he says, well, maybe before learning Italian, he should learn respect. So, you know, that's not a great situation to be in. As I understand it, I think the club's position is Stefano Pioli is the manager. He has a contract until the end of the season. Let's see how the pandemic unfolds. There's no reason to rush into things right now. Rangnick is still working for Red Bull. Maybe he'll continue at Red Bull. Maybe he won't. But they're certainly not going to be bullied into making a decision one way or the other, neither by Rangnick nor by Maldini at the other end.
One last thing. They're friends again. Balotelli, Chiellini, after Chiellini, critical, of course, of the striker in his autobiography. Did they go? They went on TV together, Gab? What did they do?
It was actually pretty sweet. I mean, basically, like, there's a TV show in Italy, Le Iene, who loves to bring things together. And, you know, they kind of, they went round to Chiellini's house and they said, you know what, like, you know, you really hurt his feelings. Did you really mean that? They went to Mario's house and be like, how did it make you feel? Blah, blah, blah. You guys had mean words to say to each other. And then, you know, because we still have social distancing in Italy, you know, they got them to Skype each other and they sort of made up. And look, the show was kind of fun and jokey, but I think Chiellini, and I was very hard on Chiellini earlier this week, and as well as in my column on the website, I got to give props to Chiellini. He came out and he said, look, I was wrong to speak the way I did about Mario, and I shouldn't have spoken out that way. And I made a mistake, and I try to learn from my mistakes. And I've, you know, been doing a lot of learning, you know, and I'll continue to make mistakes, and I'll continue to learn. And, you know, and obviously Mario couldn't hug him, obviously, because they were socially distanced. But, you know, he gave him a metaphorical hug, and let's all move on.
Oh, my God. Maybe we should do that with Burley when he argues with people in the future. I think that'd be good. Knocking on his door. Hey, what can't speak can't lie. I'm not bothered. I've said what I've said. I'm moving on. Right, let's get back, shall we, and talking about the return of football in Germany. Of course, not long now, just a couple of days ago, until we see action back in the Bundesliga. Well, Bayern Munich CEO Karl-Heinz Rummenigge was talking today. Adrian Healy was in on the call, and he asked him about how he thinks all of this is going to affect the transfer market.
I believe the impact of the market in the next summer will be, I don't know, I would like to use the word dramatically, but it will have an impact, because I'm hearing that many clubs would like to give players on the market to sell, and there are not so many clubs able to pay in cash or to fulfill the demand and request of these clubs. So I believe prices will go down, and maybe salaries as well.
Jules, he hasn't really said anything we didn't expect him to say. You guys have been saying it for a while now about how what has happened will change the dynamics of the transfer market, certainly short term.
Of course, it's a no-brainer that things would be different, that there would be less money for transfer fees, for wages as well, that clubs will have to be very careful. And we're not even thinking about financial fair play or anything like that. We're thinking about clubs not going bust, not going bankrupt, not doing anything silly with their money, because the money won't be there. TV rights, as we've been mentioning on the show today, but ever since that pandemic started and the crisis started, that some have been paid, some won't be paid, some will be paid half of it maybe, or some of it and not all of it. So it would be very difficult. Ticket revenue are not coming in, and they could last for much longer if games keep being played behind closed doors as well. So this could be terrible for clubs. And of course, the first consequence, direct consequence, would be less money for wages, less money for transfer fees, and no craziness like we've seen before.
Jules is normally such a lovely guy, but since you mentioned Germans and Bundesliga, he's off kicking people left, right and centre. I suppose the significance...
That's not true.
The significance of this, Gab, is the fact that obviously someone so high up at such a big club is admitting that things are going to change.
Yeah, I mean, look, we've heard this from other clubs too. We've heard it from Barcelona. We've heard it from Juventus. Whenever there is a bump in the economy, businesses hunker down and they get a little bit more conservative, at least in terms of they're not even in a position where they can assess the damage right now, as Jules said. You know, they don't know how long they're going to be behind closed doors. They don't quite know, you know, what the reality of the situation is going to be. So I think it's normal. He said that. Where I'm a little bit more optimistic is one of the great things about the business of football is that most of your costs, you know, if you're running a business, are player wages. Most of those are labor costs. And the reality is these people don't have contracts for life. You know, every year, 20 to 25% of your squad magically disappears. Or you can extend them to cheaper contracts. Nobody's forcing you to sell. So I think we are going to see some conservatism. But you know what? There's also teams that are sitting on piles of money out there. And, you know, they may be tempted to swoop in and take advantage of everybody else's misfortune. So I'm not as negative as some on the transfer market.
Thank you very much, boys. Well, we know Jules won't be watching, but most of the rest of the football fraternity will as the Bundesliga returns this weekend. Borussia Dortmund taking on Schalke. You got Eintracht Frankfurt against Borussia Mönchengladbach. And then on the Sunday, of course, Union Berlin against the league leaders Bayern Munich.
GEICO gets you access to licensed agents 24/7, which means that GEICO is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like your mom, when you fill out really, really important paperwork on the first day of a new job.
Name? Check. Birthday? Social security? Is that a thing? Hey, mom, what is my social security number? Mom? 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 Okay, let's guess. 0017. Oh, Gemini. Hashtag. Done.
GEICO. Always there for you with savings and 24/7 access to licensed agents.
Foot odor throwing you off your game? Stick to a winning game plan with Odor Eaters, featuring three advanced odor and wetness fighters. The lineup provides long-lasting odor control plus more to keep your feet on their game.
Odor Eaters powder provides outstanding moisture control. Clear drying spray is the MVP in preventing athlete's foot, while insoles work continuously to manage wetness while adding a layer of comfort. Pick up today at Walmart, Target, CVS, Dollar General, or other fine retailers.
Odor Eaters. Destroy foot odor with the best in odor defense.
8 years ago to the very day, we saw the final round of matches in the 2011-2012 Premier League season. And it, of course, provided the most extraordinary end to a campaign that we've ever seen in this era. United and City level on points going into the final day. City, though, massive favourites because they were home against QPR. But what a 90-plus minutes it would prove to be as we welcome in Craig Burley and Stevie Nicol to the show. It looked so easy for City, but boy, they made hard work of it. Let's not forget, rewatching it, I'd forgotten, they were 2-1 down going into injury time. United winning away, it looked like United were going to snatch the title away from them. Dzeko scored, and then Aguero, of course, scoring that extraordinary goal late on. The Aguero shout heard around the world. Craig, you're in the commentary box for this historic moment.
Yeah, and I saw a clip that was floating around a couple of weeks ago. And I forgot as well that Dzeko had come off the bench along with Balotelli and scored also in injury time. I mean, that's how late and how desperate it got. And, you know, that impact shouldn't be forgotten as well. But, you know, turning up to the game, Dan, this, it's never a formality. But, you know, you're a side that were top of the league at home against a team in QPR who'd struggled all year but did still have the threat of relegation going into the last day hanging over them. So they didn't. They didn't have nothing to fight for. They had their survival to fight for. But nobody envisaged how much of a struggle it was going to turn out for Manchester City.
What was it like to commentate that game?
Well, I've never seen emotions like it amongst supporters, or rarely. You know, when you think about it, you know, Joey Barton was sent off around 66 minutes. So they were down to 10 men. They were depleted. Gabriel Cissé gave them the lead. And then after City equalised, and then Darren Mackey scored after City gave the ball away and there was a counter-attack, Mackey scored with a header to make it 2-1. It was like, okay, City are just going to regroup. But I think there's something like 80% possession, but just couldn't break them down. Paddy Kenny was in goal for QPR. He made save after save after save. And one of the issues, and I remember it in the commentary, was because Balotelli and I think Jekyll were on the bench, they struggle for physicality for balls into the box. And as you know, when a team is defending so deep and so narrow, you need to get good quality crosses in. So it wasn't really until those two players come on that they were able to have a physical presence in the final third, and ultimately that's what got them over the line.
And you did it with Peter Drury, yes?
Yeah, Peter, one of the nicest, best commentators on the planet, also one of the calmest, most placid commentators on the planet. I thought, and I've said this to you before, I thought I was going to have to tie him onto the TV gantry when that Aguero goal went in. Staggering, staggering, he was screaming, and it was staggering. But up until that very second, I was looking around about, Dan, from our position in the gantry. There was fans crying. There was City fans with their head in their hands. Don't forget, we're seconds away from this game being over. We're seconds away from City handing United the title. I'll never forget looking over the gantry from our heady position, looking down, seeing Roberto Mancini almost on his knees, right by the side of the pitch. They'd blown it. They'd absolutely blown their best ever opportunity. And that was the emotions. It went from the depths of despair, it was tears, they were distraught, to the emotions of one flick from Balotelli, to their key player, to their star man, and there was Sergio Aguero to put it in the back of the net. By the way, he could have went down from a tackle just before he put the strike in, but he stayed on his feet and he got his just rewards. When the goal went in, the place, of course, the place erupted. Peter Drury erupted. And it was over, they got over the line, but bloody hell, they'd made it hell of a difficult for themselves.
It's why we love sport, isn't it, Stevie?
Well, you can't rate it. And if you tried to write it down and show it to somebody, they would just say, don't be silly. There's no way that's going to happen. I mean, the circumstances are just, they're just incredible. Having to beat a side like QPR to win the title and you're at home, I mean, really, it should have been a given, but as Craig explained it so well, the way it unfolded, it's fantastic now for Man City fans. I mean, it's great for us outsiders watching it. When the goal goes in, I mean, anybody who's a football fan must have been off the seat, unless you're a Man United fan, of course. So, absolutely extraordinary.
And it had to be Aguero, of course. Great. His celebration, brilliant. I imagine that's something you'll look back on and go, yeah, I quite enjoyed that moment.
Yeah, and I don't know if he got booked for taking his shirt off or what. I don't. Who cares? But it was, you know, he was always going to be an icon for the City fans. Anyway, never mind the sort of 8 years he's had since and what he had before. But that goal would forever portray him as a legend at Manchester City. And for it to fall to him, and we know how good a player he is, we know how good a finisher he is, and for him just to dispatch it in the way that he did so late on, it was the last chance. He wasn't going to get another chance. They were not going to get another chance. This was it. And Paddy Kenny, as I said, had made a hell of a lot of saves that day, but he hit it so hard and controlled, and there it was. The title was then delivered on a plate. Let's not forget, these City fans have had to sit at that point and watch Man United win title after title, Champions League after Champions League, FA Cup after FA Cup. They've had their noses rubbed in it so many times. Can you imagine if they had blown it to lowly relegation fighting QPR? These people couldn't have faced work on a Monday morning. So it was all on the line, mate. And as you know, I never really get caught up in the emotion too often. But to say, I remember looking at Peter Drury during that game saying, they've blown this. How the hell are they blowing this? But they had at one point. They had bottled it, and it was incredible. And to see the supporters and see how much it meant to them in defeat and then in victory was actually quite a special moment.
I think I made a fair statement at the start of this segment talking about the fact that this is the most dramatic ending we've seen in the Premier League era. But let's not forget, of course, football did exist before the Premier League. And Stevie, you were involved in that extraordinary match at Anfield, of course. Arsenal taking on your side. Arsenal needed to win by at least two goals. And they did so thanks to that late, late winner from Michael Thomas. Out of the two, Stevie, in your opinion, which was the more dramatic?
Oh, I think you've got to say Aguero. The fact that it's the last second, it's the last kick, the whole way the game unfolded. I mean, the only thing we can say is that, you know, both Arsenal and I were going for the title. So it was the two best teams in the league at that time. The City one, the story is just incredible. You know, a team of no hope, as QPR, struggling all year against a team that had been sensational pretty much all season. And so the way that unfolded. I have to tell you though, when I saw the pictures of Manchester United players walking around the field having found out the result, the first thing that came to my mind was that game you were talking about, Dan, that we lost to Arsenal, because I knew exactly how they felt. I can't tell you I know how Aguero felt, but I can tell you how Man United players felt walking round. You know, it's, you don't know what to do. You don't want to speak. There's complete silence everywhere. You go in the dressing room eventually, and you sit down and you just stare into the ground. You don't want to get changed. You don't, as I said, you don't want to see anything. And eventually somebody, one of the coaches, will say, right, let's go. And then everybody will make a move. You know, your head goes into a fog. As I said, I remember it only too well. Unfortunately, I can't quite put myself in the position of Aguero.
To that point, Stevie, which would be harder, do you think? You, for Liverpool against Arsenal, where fate was in your hands, you pretty much had the control of your destiny, or Manchester United, where it didn't matter what you did, it was all reliant on City, and of course they gave you that little bit of chance, that hope, which was taken away from you in the 95th minute.
Well, clearly you want everything to be in your own hands. But the problem that United had was that their game was done and they were told that City were 2-1 behind. Now, as poor as QPR had been, knowing that it's actually injury time, knowing that they have to score twice, otherwise you've won the Premier League title, I don't care how good an imagination you have as a player, you just don't see that happening. Man United players, nobody concerned with Man United would have even dreamt that they would have got two goals in that injury time to win the title. So, listen, you want it in your hands. So, for United, just for a couple of minutes, they were champions. But then they got taken away big time.
Which was more dramatic for you, Craig? 89 or 2012?
2012, I agree with Stevie. 89, I remember watching it. And as Stevie said, they were the two best sides that year. The fact that Arsenal were able to get over the line at Anfield is not a huge surprise, because, you know, for the very reasons that both us have mentioned. The fact that, you know, QPR were, in most people's eyes, cannon fodder, really, at home, and had been sort of for most of that season. That's why they were in the position that they were in. And I think what makes it so dramatic, and this is what you touched on at the start of this, is it's not that, you know, they had 20 minutes left to get a winner. It's not that they had all that time left and the clock was ticking slowly. The clock was going round and like a Formula One car. You know, they needed two goals after 90 minutes when the board went up for injury time. They needed two goals. And when Dzeko got that header, there was a little bit of hope. In 90 minutes, when the fourth official put the board up, it was done. They had given up. The fans had given up. They were crying, and so the very fact that they got two goals in injury time, coming back from a team to beat a team who, if they'd lost to and handed the title to United, and let's be honest, that's what they've been doing, handing the title, there would have been no comeback for a lot of those players, and certainly not for that coach, Roberto Mancini. It was huge, and it was as dramatic as it gets.
Thank you very much, gents. Well, this conversation continues over on the website. Alexis is joined by Mark Ogden and Julian Lescott to look back at that famous victory for City, comparing it to the 89 win for Arsenal.
Geico knows there are many reasons why you ride, from the camaraderie of the other bikers, a band of brothers always there for you, rain or shine, to the amazing savings you get with Geico on your motorcycle insurance and accessories coverage all year round. But for Bucky Hornhill, it was one reason in particular.
It was my helmet hair. I was born with helmet hair. I've tried to cut it a bunch of times, even buzzing it, but it immediately just goes back to helmet hair.
Geico Motorcycle. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
Napa Know How.
Get all the quality parts you need at your locally owned Napa. Because right now, when you order from Napa online, you can pick up curbside at your local store in just 30 minutes. Or get your order delivered direct to your door with free one-day shipping and over 160,000 quality parts when you spend $50 or more. Quality parts delivered quickly and safely. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
At participating stores, standard ground shipping and exclusions apply.
Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. It's an all-French affair. Julien Laurent and Frank Leboeuf with me. The first time, of course, they've been reunited after Jules thrashed Frank in the World Cup 98 quiz. And the first question is about that, actually. And it asks you, Frank, how on earth does Jules know more than you about the World Cup?
Because he's a journalist and I was a player. And as a player, I take care of what's going on the field, not about the name of the referee, who was the top scorer. I don't know one thing, that I was playing and that I won. The rest, it's history.
That is all of ours. Don't you find it, Jules, when you speak to players about games, they have no recollection about hardly anything or anyone or anything that's been happening?
Yeah, I don't buy that at all. I mean, Leboeuf should know better. I was 17 at the time. You know, it's like he was there. It's like he's kept all the memorabilia and everything in his house, and him and the players meet up regularly for charity matches and everything. Like, this is part of him. How can he got nothing? Not even 1 point, nothing. And we did try to help him a lot.
Yeah, it's true that we remember that Suker scored, that the referee, I think as Zidane, that if he knows the name of the referee, that if he was even Tunisian or American, I think he hasn't got a clue about that. So we don't have a clue about that. That's a journalist thing, and enjoy it, guys. We don't care.
We can't afford Zidane. That's why we've got you on, Frank.
I can... That's very mean, first. And I'm going to call him if you need a query, if you need to ask him something.
Imagine you ring up. I've got a really urgent question for you, Zizou. What was the name of the referee in the final?
Yeah, he would say, "Why do you bother me with that question?" No, I'm pretty sure that none of the players know the name of the referee, even the Brazilian.
Okay, all right. Okay,
with all due respect, sorry.
Is it absolutely important for PSG to play warm-up or friendly matches with other teams if they want to prepare for the Champions League in August?
Of course it is. I mean, it makes no sense. There is no way Paris Saint-Germain is going to win the Champions League if they don't have other games before. It's impossible. You get the rhythm, you also get mentally the preparation and everything. It's crucial for any club to go back to their own championship to get ready for big games. Even friendly games are not good for the Paris Saint-Germain. They need to play big games. And if the Champions League has to be finished, I think, and I'm sorry for Jules, Paris Saint-Germain has no chance to win it.
You think, though, back to European Championships, what, Denmark were on the beach, weren't they, till they got recalled, brought into the tournament, they win it all. Yeah, any practice, any warm-ups, Jules?
No, that's true, and I mean, I guess that's one team that can maybe inspire the Parisians, but Frank is right on many reasons. If you could choose, you would choose to have some games, competitive matches, to get fitter, to get that rhythm that he was explaining, to go back playing together and everything. You could see also the other side of the argument is that maybe teams in Italy, not so much in Germany, but in Spain and in England, will play every 3 days, and they might get to August, when the Champions League is resuming, in a more tired state than the PSG, for example, who wouldn't have played. I think the right balance would be better for everyone, and maybe that's what the Germans are doing. Their leagues will be finished by the end of June. They will have some games. They can have a bit of time off and then start again for Bayern Munich, for example, who will resume in the Champions League. So it's not ideal for PSG, but you could also think that the others will play a lot before the Champions League starts again.
No way. I don't buy that. I'm sorry, Jules. I mean, they had two months off. They're going to get ready back, and they're going to be fit. They're not going to be tired. They're football professional at the end of the day. And for the Denmark example, they had like maybe 3 weeks off. No, 2 months. 2 months is huge. Nobody in his career has 2 months. And suddenly if you're injured, you have 2 months off. And we know, and I know, even with 3 weeks off, when you come back, you struggle, you know, getting back to your fitness and your best. So it's going to be a problem. And if Paris Saint-Germain hasn't got real games, they're going to struggle.
Frank, you forget, though, Julian is PSG TV. You've got to remember this.
No, Julian is a big fan, so is as when you love somebody, you're completely blind.
That is very true. If you could play on any team throughout the history of the sport, which team would you pick? Jules?
Oh, that's a good one. I would have loved to be on the Arsenal Invincibles just for the feeling of not losing, or the AC Milan Invincibles as well with Capello, who went on an even longer run of games without losing. But I think the Barcelona of Pep Guardiola, and be one of the members of that team with Messi, Iniesta, Xavi, Busquets, all at their peak and etc. I think that would be pretty special.
What position? You would be in the Busquets role, Jules?
No, I can leave Busquets, you know, dictating the game and the pace of the game. And I think I was going to say right back, but they had a pretty good one in Dani Alves. I don't know, they had no weakest link. I'd be like a left winger maybe. I don't have to do too much, but I can still score a few goals that Messi sets up on the plate for me. I can take all the credit, big smile, you know, a few sponsorship deals, a few adverts and a lot of trophies.
Frank?
It was a very good example, and I would have picked maybe the Guardiola's team, because as a defender, at the time you didn't do anything. You just didn't even defend. You just had to give the first ball and you won. So many titles. But I will be more vintage. I will pick two teams. The national team of 70 in Brazil. Fantastic to play with Pelé. Wow. A dream. And then so many other fantastic players. And Ajax from the beginning of the 70s with Johan Cruyff, Johan Niskens, because it was total football. You could end up, you know, striker, being a central defender. Everybody was playing for the other, so it was fantastic. And I would have had long hair. That would have been fantastic.
Right, Jules, listen. Do you think that football needs to introduce a salary cap for players and agents in order to control the financials for the future of football?
I don't think it would be a bad idea. I just think it's impossible. It's too late to where the sport is now, how much money the clubs are getting from TV rights and all sorts of deals, how much the players already are earning. It would be far more healthy in many respects if you could have a salary cap, if the agent fees and were capped as well. I get that, and it'd probably be easier for clubs not to go bust, not to go bankrupt, not to go over the top either. I just think the game has gone to such a level now that we're too far into the capitalism of football in many respects to be able to do that.
Yesterday, Craig and Shaka were arguing as to who was the better chef between the two of them, which leads us to the question that's been sent in today. Frank, would you rather eat a meal prepared by Craig or Shaka?
Well, I will go with Shaka, because I think it will be more exotic than a Scottish meal. So you know what I mean? I don't know what a Scottish meal could be, but I'm sure it will be full of surprises with Shaka. So I'll definitely go to Shaka.
Craig claims he's a very good experimental cook, by the way, Frank. Well away from the traditional Scottish cuisine.
Yeah, you know, you can make anything up, you know, if you want in your life. I'm a fantastic skater, and I surf very well too.
Yep.
No.
You did the same, saying you're a fantastic actor as well, didn't you?
Yeah, but that's, you can put a little bit of truthness, you know, in some arguments, you know.
Who should PSG buy with the money if and when Mbappe leaves, Jules? Well, that's what Jules not going to say. Mbappe's leaving. He'll be in tears.
He's going to start crying.
Is the question Could he leave? Is that the question?
No. How are you going to spend the money when he leaves?
Okay, so in 4 or 5 years' time, or maybe 10 years' time when he leaves, how we spend the money? Well, I guess by then, I mean, listen, there's a point, and I've said it hundreds of times, he will leave, and Neymar will leave as well, and then PSG will look for the next big thing that is possible for them to get, so they won't get Cristiano, they won't get Messi. By the time that Mbappe or Neymar goes, Jadon Sancho might be already at a club where you can't poach him out of that club. So it's hard to say now, because we don't know when Mbappe will leave. We don't know then by that time who will be available on the market, or who will be easier or too hard to get from other clubs. But you would think that so far, if you look at the progress of the club with the Ibrahimovic years and then the Neymar years, and then hopefully a few Mbappe's years as well, they've done pretty good each time the marquee player, the star player left, to sort of replace him in a way, even if they were all different profiles. So we would have to hope that they would have a contingency plan. They would have almost prepared the sort of post-Mbappe era, whenever that is, a post-Neymar era, and that they will be ready to get another marquee signing, another marquee player, and then go again.
Done pretty good. What are you talking about, Jules? They mucked up in the Champions League every year, no matter who was there.
Hang on. No, in the sense that, if Ibra is your big marquee signing, he leaves, that's a huge hole to fill. Go and find someone who can fill that void. And I don't think it was easy, just like this. So getting Neymar and then Mbappe the same summer, I think was pretty impressive from Paris, albeit putting themselves in danger with financial fair play and everything. But still, it was pretty impressive. Let's see who they can get next to come once those two are leaving.
Frank.
Yeah.
About a man very close to your heart. Had Ronaldo, phenomenal, not had those injuries, would he have gone on to become the greatest, better than Messi and Cristiano?
Well, even with his injury, yeah, he has been absolutely fantastic. And he came back after his, especially when he was at Inter Milan, when he has that, I remember the scene, when he had this knee problem. Ronaldo was simply fantastic, and most people, when they talk about Ronaldo and compare with the other Ronaldo because they have the same name, they say the real Ronaldo. It shows how big he was, how talented he was, and I don't know, it's not the same era. The media maybe weren't also as big as it is now, but Ronaldo was a huge star, and maybe as big as Ronaldo and Messi are now. So I have no doubt that Ronaldo is at the same level and they can eat at the same table.
What do you think, Jules?
I agree with Frank in the sense that he's one of the five best ever, for me at least. I think that, of course, with so many injuries, he would have had a much better career. When you think that he, for a long time, hold that record of the most goals scored at World Cups, when some of them, was not fully fit or 100%, it's quite incredible. And also, I think maybe the lifestyle that he was leading outside of the pitch, if he'd been maybe a bit more disciplined, to put it that way, maybe he would have been even better. Like, imagining him with the Cristiano Ronaldo kind of work ethic, it would have been incredible, maybe unstoppable.
Final question is for you, Frank.
Mm-hmm.
During your playing days, did you ever imagine Craig would be a pundit after his career?
Well, he had a little teeth problem, so I never thought that he would be. The problem would be so bad that in a way that he could speak on TV.
He had a big teeth problem in that he didn't have any.
Yeah, so I say, well, if he smiles on TV and he's a pundit, so he's going to be a problem. But he sorted the problem very well. And so he's absolutely fantastic. He's always been something thoughtful about the game, about the way football should be. So it's no doubt that, and I'm not surprised, and I can see him on ESPN giving his best knowledge about football. It was more a physical aspect of the person than the brain aspect of the person.
The brain aspect, yeah. Frank, go and text Zidane now. You may as well. Thank you very much to Jules. We'll be back tomorrow for more of this. Thank you, as always, for your tweets. Till tomorrow, goodbye.